Hey everybody, check this out. Dickies, the number one brand in performance workwear, knows that work is more than just what you do, it's who you are. And just like pro athletes, your work is judged by how you perform on that job. That's why Dickies FlexWork pants and shirts are engineered to give you superior mobility, advanced protection, and enhanced durability. Plus, Dickies Flex is backed with Dickies Unconditional Satisfaction Guarantee, so you know that the Flex Series is made to work as hard as you do. Dickies Flex, engineered to move, engineered to last. You can learn more at Dickies.com. Once again, Dickies.com.
This is RPO, Rome Price Opinion. Now, here's Jim Rome and two-time Super Bowl champion, Trevor Price.
Trevor, my man, this was an unusual weekend in the sense that normally, right at kickoff, my phone starts to melt. You start to blow me up. But I did not hear from you this weekend. I started wondering if everything was all right. How was your weekend? What were you up to?
It wasn't all right. The wife wanted to talk. I said, talk about what? It's football time. Talk about us. I was like, oh, Jesus Christ, what about us?
Talk about us.
And then I got the whole diatribe, I got the whole thing, but I kept my left eye on red zone. Even when the volume's down on red zone, I can read lips and read plays. So I got everything I need to do. And by the time we got done, quote unquote, talking, or her talking and me listening, it was Sunday night football time. So I made it just in time, Jim. I made it just in time.
Dude, I mean, you know this better name, buddy. Happy life, happy wife. Are you saying that you got done right around the time of Sunday night football? Did you guys have a conversation, or did she talk to you all day long?
Hey, well, it was more like, how are we going to divvy up your assets? Excuse me? So it took a little while. But I was listening to two things at once, and I'm processing half my brain on football and processing the other half of my brain on whatever she was talking about.
Divvy up your assets. Oh, good, man. Okay. All right. Doing work. I understand that. All right, Trevor. So Seattle, let me start right there. Seattle used to be hyped for their incredible culture and how guys love playing for Pete Carroll. But when it goes, we know it goes quickly. Have you ever seen a player get hurt the way Earl Thomas did in that game and flip off his own coach coming off the field? And as one extra part, did he have a right to be that pissed?
Two things. There's two answers to that. There's three answers. First of all, I've never seen it. B, yes, he had every right. C, that whole competition Thursday and lie to him Monday and all that college shit that Pete Carroll's been preaching for a long time, I'm going to tell you something. It weighs as you get older. It's cool when you're 23, 24, 25. But when you're going to 30 years old, the last thing I want to hear is competition Thursday. I need ice bass Friday. I'm not – the rest of that shit, you know, the college culture – as it seeps into the NFL, you always wind up with some college-like coaches. And I think Pete Carroll's college-like, we compete every day and that type of thing. NFL players don't want to compete every day, Jim. They don't. I want to come to practice and get through practice and get to the game so I can get paid. Now, the last part is what Earl Thomas is, the getting paid part. Realize that guy's a free agent this year. He's a 30-year-old safety with a broken leg and no contract come January. Think about that. So the fact that he's flipping a bird would have been a lot better if he could walk. It would have been a lot worse if he could walk. If he could have walked to the sideline, my God, what would he have said or done? I'm guaranteeing you right now, Jim, he does not step foot in the Seattle Seahawks facility ever again. Not for rehab, not for anything. I went through one of these myself. I busted my back, and I tore up L5 and L3. And the doctor was like, okay, you had to go back and rehab. I was like, I ain't going back. I'll rehab here with you. And he was like, we can't do that. I tried to pull some of that myself in Denver, but it doesn't work like that because I wasn't a free agent. He is. The fact he wasn't going to practice, the fact that Pete Carroll was trying to save it and say, oh, he enjoys playing football. Not for you, Pete. Not for you. There is a problem, and that's why every NFL player understands what Le'Veon Bell is going through. We can laugh some of that stuff off, an offensive lineman crossing the line, and we can kind of joke and ha-ha some of that stuff, but Le'Veon Bell's in one piece right now. Earl Thomas is not, and that shit's not fair.
You know, it's interesting, Trevor, that you said that every single NFL player knows that. First of all, I want to say that I had no issue at all with what he did. I understand why he's angry. That's why he didn't want to play and why he wanted a contract, because he knew something like that could happen, and then sure enough, he went out there, and that's exactly what happened. But to your point about how every NFL player knows what he's going through and what happened to him, what Le'Veon Bell's doing right now, Le'Veon Bell's own offensive lineman didn't seem to know what he was dealing with. Remember, you and I had that conversation.
Yeah, that's why then I kind of laughed it off as, you know, don't get the cheese, it's a trap, and you know what I mean? Because there was no physical harm, there was no real damage done, right? And I've seen some guys on TV talking about, well, you know, you have other guys in the locker room look up to you. They're not looking after my check nor my family, so don't look up to me. Don't look up to me. I've always said, Jim, from the time I was drafted, if you need to be led, you don't need to play pro football. If there is no I in team, Jim, there's an M and an E, me. And that me is part of this team. And who are you going to look out for first when football is the ultimate meritocracy, right? The best players get paid more. We are not all paid the same amount of money. This is not a scholarship. Some of us are more valuable than others. And Earl Thomas thought his value was more than he had right now. That's debatable between him and whatever team wants to sign him. What's not debatable is, he is going into a year he has no contract and a broken leg. That's why this is important. That's why, and first of all, the crazy thing is, we keep talking about guaranteed contracts. Earl Thomas's whole contract was guaranteed. He's getting the full amount of his contract. He's one of the only ones I've ever heard about getting the full amount of his contract. So there is two parts of it. But the fact that he wanted extension before it was done, and that has led to him breaking his fucking leg again, that is a problem. That is mismanagement on the Seahawks' part. That's mismanagement on his part. He should have never went.
He shouldn't have played, is what you're
saying. He shouldn't have played. And not showing up to practice, that means nothing. That means absolutely nothing. The best year Terrell Suggs ever had playing football with defensive player of the year, he didn't go through not one rep of training camp. Best year of his life.
Trevor, you
shouldn't have played.
Let me ask you something. And you and I, we know this also. We're not here to count another man's money. And I know what you're saying. I mean, he shouldn't have been out there because look what happened. But not being out there was going to cost him hundreds of thousands of dollars every single week. Can you understand why he would be out there then?
No, I know. I understand that because he wanted to play, because he had to put something good on tape. And the thing is, Jim, I guess it just came out a little bit ago, he was going to get traded to the Chiefs because their safety, Eric Berry, who they're paying a lot of money, can't get on or stay on the field because his body's beat to hell. So he was about to get traded. He was about to get what he wanted, and he broke his leg. So the hundreds of thousands of dollars, yes, that adds up. That's Le'Veon Bell. It adds up. But at the same token, you cannot go into a contract year as a 30-year-old safety and trying to figure out what you're going to do next, and the Seahawks don't want to address it. It's one thing if you don't want them. That's fine. And every NFL player goes through this. I told the Broncos, look, no harm, no foul. You can trade me. There's 31 other teams. I'm not a Bronco. I'm an NFL player. So whichever team I have to go play for as a mercenary, that's who I am at that particular point in my life. But Earl Thomas has busted his leg, and now he's just a free agent. And he will not be healed by January.
Well, no, and not Trevor,
like he's going to go on the free agent tour.
No, and Trevor, the fact is, neither side get what they want, right? They don't get what they want. Now he's out with a busted leg, and they don't have a tradable asset right now. They can't get anything for him, so they're both screwed. Now, in terms of traumatic,
he's going to walk out. He's just going to walk out the door. He'll never stick his head in that building again. Done. Everybody lost. If they'd have traded him, they got a second round pick. But they wanted their safety. If he'd have been traded, Dallas Cowboys had gave him whatever he wanted. Everybody got fucked.
Well, not a second rounder though, right? They were waiting for a second rounder. They couldn't get the second rounder. If Dallas would have offered a second rounder, it would have been done, right?
Right. If they offered a third, if they offer anything above a third, above a fourth round pick, a third round pick, a third and an eighth, a third and a seventh. I'm sorry. Then you trade them.
Seems to me Seattle held out. They wanted to get what they wanted to get. They didn't care about the guy, and now they're both screwed. Now, Trevor, in terms of traumatic injuries, all right, now I don't know about you, but I watched the Tyler Eifert injury once. That was one time too many. I wish I could unsee it, but I can't. That's just me. You're somebody who played in the NFL 14 years. You won a couple of Super Bowls. I would imagine you've seen some pretty traumatic injuries. You know, as somebody off to the side, what did you think when you saw that?
Number one, I have not seen it. I refuse to watch it. And here's why, Jim. I've seen that happen too many times with my own eyes being on the field. In 2007 or 2005, we're playing Jacksonville Jaguars, and our left tackle, our right tackle at the time, George Foster, you know, Denver Broncos cut system and, you know, diving at people's legs. We're playing Jacksonville. George Foster comes down on one of defensive linemen's legs. I forget what the kid's name was, the guy's name was, but when the guy rolled over, his leg was pointing the wrong way. And all 70,000 people in the stadium saw it. Have you ever heard 70,000 people all go, ooh, at the same time? It is unreal what that looked like. Now, apparently the Tyrell Eifert injury goes in the same book as when Gordon Hayward's leg was facing him. It goes in the same same part as the MLS kid, I'm sorry, that was playing for Colorado, who tore all his ligaments trying to score a goal. It goes into the pantheon of one of the worst injuries ever seen. And I don't need to look at that because, again, I've seen that happen too many times with my own eyes, and it is beyond traumatic. So I'm not really into that. The big hits and stuff I can deal with. But when you're talking about legs and knees and things that turn and do things the wrong way, like when I saw Jimmy Garoppolo step on the sideline, I saw it at full speed. When he jumped to the sideline and rolled down, I said, yeah, he tore everything in his knees. He tore all of it. I've seen it too many times. I know what it looks like. I don't need to see that shit again.
No, I don't think any of us do. You're not supposed to put your feet on backwards, things like that. So I know what you're saying. But, Trevor, when you're playing and something like that happens, I understand you guys are wired differently and business is business. But what's it like to be on the field when that happens, either to a teammate or an opponent, and then have to move beyond it in a second and keep playing?
Jesus Christ, Jim. It is a skill that you are taught. It's a learned skill. It is just the way it is, man. And even though we are wired differently, there's that part of you that says, well, that's not going to happen to me. But until it does happen to you, right? And that's the weird part. But the wiring is not much different than anybody else's. The wire is not different. You have to be – that is a learned behavior. And as NFL players, because you learn, if you made it to NFL, you've seen it in high school, you've seen it in college. I've seen guys carted off fields 1,000 times. We had a kid in Denver we thought broke his neck and was paralyzed, the safety. I think his name is Torrey Noel. We thought he broke his neck. They came in and got him off the field. He was not moving. And know what Mike Shanahan did? Move the drill down there, right back to 907. That's just part of what it is. You can't stop. We have only so much time to practice. And again, this is a business. And that business is playing football. That business is not caring for the sick. It's a different deal, man.
Trevor, that is a chilling story. That's a chilling story. I'm not going to single out.
Torrey was fine. Torrey was fine. But when
you didn't know that at the time, though.
He was not.
You didn't know that at the time. And I'm not even trying to single out the Red Lobster Shanahan. But I mean, because I'm sure other coaches would do the same thing. But if you see a kid and you think he's got a broken neck and the thought is, hey, man, just move practice. Not even a game. Just move practice down the field and let's keep going. Let's keep working. That's unbelievable.
Yeah, you got to do it. He's not, believe me, he's not the only one. Of course, this was a different time. This was like 2000, 2001. We didn't know, you know what I mean? But uh-huh. It happened. And they stopped practice for like, they let us all say something to them and that kind of thing. But it was kind of like, okay, guys, what play were we on? Where's the script? I was like, holy shit, this is real.
That's insane. All right, Trevor, so let's move on to some of the other things that happened over the weekend that were really interesting. What about Colts head coach Frank Reich going balls out, going for it on fourth down in his own territory in OT against Texas, the Texans? It backfired, but after the game he said, look, I'd do that 10 times out of 10. Did you like that call?
I love it. And if you don't love it, you should not be playing anything that is worth real money. Because at the end of the day, this is what I believe what Frank Reich's life is like mine. One day my wife walked in my house, there's a scaffolding, and me staying on the scaffolding, and there's a big-ass ceiling fan in my house, and I have a halogen light bulb. And she's like, that's not a good idea. And I turn and go, but what if I'm right? That's Frank Reich's life. Coach, do not go for a fourth on four in your territory over time. And say, but he goes, what if I'm right? Because if he was right, we'd be calling the man a hero.
Trevor, what if your wife is right?
Well, what if she's not?
But what if she is, bro? You did really well. You've owned businesses. You played 14 years in the NFL. What if you just called somebody to do that for you?
But what if I replace it myself?
Yeah, but risk and reward. You're not. He's a hero if he's right. You're not a hero if you're right.
But I changed the halogen light bulb myself.
That's heroic.
We don't even know if the fan even took halogen light bulbs. But the point is, the fact is, there's two sides to everything, right? There's a right side and a wrong side. Frank Reich is like, I'm going to be on one side of it. He's like, look, I'm not. You can't win a fight from the middle. Now, you know what you can't be, especially when you're a pro football coach, is go the way of water. Or do what would a nun do? A nun would punt. What would I do? I'm going to go for it. You're going to rob a bank, rob a big one. Robbing a bank is going fourth and four. I would give you an example of this, Jim. We were playing the AFC Championship as the Jets playing against the Steelers in 2012 with Rex Ryan's football team. The Steelers had the ball and had a 2-point lead. They were on their own 35. It was fourth and four. The Steelers went for it because somehow Mark Sanchez had caught fucking fire. And they knew if they punted him back the ball, they were going to lose. Mike Tomlin did something you never do. And it wasn't week four. It was the AFC Championship. The winner of this game is going to the Super Bowl. Fourth and four in his own territory, he had no choice but to go for it. And you know what, Jim? They made the 4 yards and could take a knee from that point and beat us. So anytime, if you have to make those decisions, you make the right side of those decisions. You go for it. Do not play for no goddamn tie. You go for it. Frank, never change. The Philly special, whatever they want to call it, but that's how you win football games. It's also how you lose them, but I guarantee you, you will be on the right side more than you're on the wrong side.
Well, I love that story. I love that analysis. Go back to what you said about, quote, and I quote, somehow fucking Mark Sanchez caught fire. Were you surprised that he caught fire? And looking back at that time, what did you make of him? What did you think of him? What was it like having him around?
You know, I loved Mark. I liked him as a quarterback.
Too.
I liked him as a person.
Me too. I want to say that. Me too. Me too.
I did. I really did, man. He was a great teammate, and he wasn't the alpha male that you want your quarterbacks to be, but he was not no soft sucker either, right? He was New York's native son. He really was. He came from a big school in a big city and came to the pros in the other big city. He went from L.A. to New York. So there was something, you know, you want to say the Broadway Joe thing is one thing. He wasn't quite Broadway Joe Namath, but my God, when he got hot, he was fucking hot, and he got hot in that game. I really like Mark, and I think, you know, he made a lot of money, and so he's been successful. I think he's still a backup in Denver, I think. He's doing something somewhere. Now he's a grizzled old quarterback. But when he was young and flashy and leading teams to the AFC Championship and that type of thing, Mark had it all, man. I had no problems with him, except for how tight he wore his pants. Me and Tony Richardson, every time he would get in the bus, I'd say, Tony, hit me. And Tony would go, woo-woo! That's how tight Mark's pants were. But he was stylish, and I thought the world of him. I thought he was great.
Dude, I'm so glad to hear you say that. He's always been one of my favorites. I love the guy. He would come on this show from USC, comes on here, shouts out to the clones. And, dude, listen, why does he wear tight pants? The same reason anybody does anything, because they can. You got to admit, man, this dude's a heartthrob. This dude was a heartthrob, man.
He looked good in it. His suits, like, he was on the European suit thing much faster than everybody else was, because he was in GQ. I'm telling you, the dude had it all. And, you had to be a little jealous of him.
Yeah, man.
But you know, the funny thing is, when I played for Baltimore, the defensive guys always complained about Kyle Bowler. Always. Like, oh, my God, look at these whack quarterbacks we have. Nobody on defense the Jets complained about Mark. There was never any talk about it. Really, I'm talking about Sean and Bart Scott. Nobody had anything bad to say about Mark.
Huh.
For some reason, man. They just never did.
Bart was another one of my favorites. What was it like having Bart around?
Oh, the best. Bart made a whole lot of money, and you knew it. When he walked in with the spike shoes, you were just like, oh, my God, Bart. Bart's house looked like a hotel. He had a go-kart track at the back. Bart was living the life. He was playing for New York. He drove a Ferrari. He was just having the best time. But let me tell you something. Bart played like a bat out of hell, and he talked like one, too. It was big fun.
Big fun, dude. I would see him when he did the season on the NFL on CBS. I'd roll in there for, you know, every other week just for my couple of minutes on air. I love being around Bart. I love all those guys. Those are all great dudes on CBS. But Bart's just got that it, man. Bart's got that fire. Bart's got that chip. Bart never forgot where he was from. Man, Bart's the real fucking deal. You don't
want
to mess with Bart. And he's a great guy.
You don't
but you don't want that problem, right? You don't want that problem.
No, you don't want that problem. Pittsburgh's fullback, I forget what the big white kid's name, but like big hunking fullback. So Pittsburgh's beating us or something, right? And Bart looks at Mike Tomlin. I'll never forget it. Bart looks at Mike Tomlin, and the fullback says, "Bart, you want some of me?" And Bart says, "Tomlin, set his ass out here." And Tomlin turned and looked at Bart, and looked at the fullback, and looked at Bart again, and told the fullback, "Take your ass in there." Right? Jim, I was on the field. They snapped the ball. I heard hike, and then I heard explosion. Then I looked up, and I heard, I saw homeboy walking back toward his sideline. And Bart's helmet was crooked, and his chin strap was unbuckled, and Bart was screaming at the top of his lungs. I was like, "Well, there's one battle we won. The rest of us lost, but Bart just won that one."
This is why we do the RPO. My man Trevor Price has got stories and stories for days. All right, so Trevor, the Raiders come back and they punk the Browns in OT, but I said it on the show earlier today, this is the one and only time I really don't give a damn about what the scoreboard says. I would rather be the Browns than I'd want to be the Raiders. I absolutely hate blaming shit on the refs, but how hard did the refs jam the Browns right here? Hard enough to cost them that game?
Unbelievable. And I think everybody in the country that watches this game that knows a modicum about it, even Raider fans.
Modicum? Like,
yes.
Dude, such a good word, modicum.
Well, you know, I used to write for the New York Times, Jim. Okay, I mean, man. I am an intern.
I'm sorry. My bad.
So the entire football, you know, if you're a Raiders Nation, Browns Nation, Chargers Nation, Notre Dame, whatever you are, you watch those two teams play, you know the Browns are a better team. And I think by a couple of yardsticks, they're a better team. The Browns, Jim, are a 10-6 football team that needs to learn how to go 10-6. Talent-wise, coaching-wise, they are 10-6. Their confidence is 2-14. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
But the talent and where they're going, they need. But remember, the Browns are two field goals and an elbow away from being 4-1, 4-0. Two kickers and a goddamn elbow. But Carlos Hyde's elbow hit, if his elbow, the ref screwed him, but if his elbow had hit, what, a yard or 12 to 16 inches? They are 4-0. So let's be real about what the Browns are. The Browns need to be patient with Hugh. He needs to be there at least two more years and let Baker Mayfield completely, completely understand the NFL. It's one thing to understand the Browns playbook. It's one thing to understand the Raiders defensive playbook. Because Hugh will teach it to you. If you see it on tape, I will teach it to you. So they need to let, if they've already gone through the shit they've already gone through, right? The quote, "If you find yourself going through hell, just keep going." They just need to keep going. They will get through this, I'm telling you, because everybody can see it.
I think so too. All right, so for instance, Trevor, if they're a 10-6 football team in your mind, you know, maybe they have to learn how to win first and finish. If they're a 10-6 football team, what did you think about the 3-0 Dolphins going into Foxborough? Did they feel like they were a 10-6 team, or do they feel like the same old 7-9 Dolphins even though they were 3-0?
7-9 every day. Every day, and I hate saying it, but it's just what they are. You know, the old, you know, who was it? Bill Parsons, your record. If record tells you what you are.
You are what your record says you are.
That's a lie, because who in God's name thought the Dolphins were that good? Nobody, not even the Dolphins. Because as you go up to Foxborough and the weather is more Miami like than it was New England Patriots like, and you get the ball run down your throat over and over and over again, it tells you all you need to know. Ryan Tannehill. The weird thing about Ryan Tannehill was this. He was a college wide receiver. How can he not run? I know you blew out your knee. I understand that. But lots of wide receivers have blown out their knees. And you can't run. You can't. There's no threat of Ryan Tannehill running the ball. He was a college wideout. For God's sake, at Texas A&M, they don't recruit slow guys. He's fast. Where did your athleticism go? And how the hell did he become a quarterback? There's a lot of questions that need to be answered. And when you go into the draft and you're looking at college kids to bring to your club, you have to have those questions answered. And I don't think they answer them. I think Ryan Tannehill, to me, is just a guy. He is just a guy. He's always been just a guy. Quarterbacks, you want quarterbacks who have played quarterback from time they were young. You don't want a guy that was you know, happened to be throwing the ball on their scout team and Texas A&M goes, "Hey, you can play quarterback." Sure. That's not what you want to draft. So he is just a guy, and I think he's still learning how to play the position. He's still learning how to throw a football.
All right, so if you're looking for me to, if you're looking for me to argue the point that he's just a guy, I'm not doing it. I see it the same way. I'm not going to go there. What about the Patriots? I mean, obviously, I made the point earlier today, Trevor, that even though they're looking up at Miami in the AFC East, they just clinched the AFC East. We know that already. But does the entire conference, because they're getting Julian Edelman back, Josh Gordon, I think is going to be a factor. Hey, and by the way, this nonsense about how poor Tommy. Tommy has no weapons around him. Tommy's got weapons all over the field around him right now. So never mind the AFC East. Are they once again the team to beat in the conference? Does it all run through them still?
It does, because the AFC East is a disaster, right? The AFC East can't figure itself out. And my boy Josh Allen took another step back. The Jets are whatever the hell they're doing. And the Miami, you know, prop themselves up, only to be played whack-a-mole and get hit back down to the goddamn hole of the video game machine. The Patriots are the class of the AFC East. The AFC, because they'll never play a away game in the playoffs. They're either seeded one or two because of the conference they play in. I mean, take it to the AFC North. We don't know which were the two teams, Cincinnati or the Ravens, or even the Pittsburgh Steelers, if they kind of figure it out, are the best team. So that's a fist fight to the end. Whereas the Patriots are going to run through the AFC East and once again be seated, be a division champion, and be seated as one of the top two seeds. So that is the problem. If you move somehow, you can move the Patriots to the AFC North and the Browns to the AFC East, you have a more competitive AFC East, and you have a goddamn dogfight in the AFC North.
Is realignment the answer? Is that your proposition?
That's the only answer. Until they realign the conferences and get rid of the Patriots of the AFC East, we are going to continue.
Dude, why do we want to penalize the Patriots for being great?
No, we don't. But you asked me a question. Is it the same old thing? As long as they're in the AFC East, they will be one of the teams to beat.
All right,
period,
listen.
Point blank.
Before I get to your picks and our waiver wire selections, let's get personal for a minute. Your 7-year-old son played his first football game ever in pads over the weekend. What was it like for him, and what was it like for you watching him as a former NFL player / father?
Okay, this is going to be good. So he's in 7th grade, right? So he's 12 years old.
Okay, my bad, 7th grade, my bad.
Yeah, no worries. So it's the same thing, right? The thing is, what a lot of parents do and what my kid's school does, they have something called pre-first. So kindergarten, if you're not smart enough to go to first grade, they make you do kindergarten over again. And you become, by the time you get to middle school, by the time you leave 8th grade, you're 15, 14 years old.
Right.
My son is 12. He has not hit puberty yet. All of his friends have mustaches, and they're all taller than him. And like, I'm looking at their dads, and I'm looking at me like, are you fucking kidding me? Why is my kid so short? So I'm like, look, son, you're going to play this middle linebacker, and I don't know what they're going to put you on offense. So they put him at guard. And the kick return, they put him at the second line. So I'm like, okay, we'll figure out. He wears number 9. He was a single-digit gym. I'm like, yeah, first game he's playing against Loyola Blakefield, which is like a private school in Baltimore that doesn't have a high school football team. Jim, I'm going to skip to the end of the game. After the game, he gets to the car. He starts shaking his head. I was like, son, how was it? He said, Dad, it was chaos. I didn't know what was going on.
Right. Right.
I said, look. What do you mean? He said that I was like a wind and a bunch of chaos and lots of stuff going on. He got pancaked 3 times. He got knocked over 2 times. He had no tackles. He had no aggression. He tried to hold a kid that was pass rushing by him, and he didn't come off the field. So think about all that. All that, and it didn't take long. He played every fucking snap. What a disaster. And as a dad, I was like, you know what I'm not going to do? I'm not going to yell at him and tell him he's soft. But I had him on the tackling dummy on Sunday. Day off, we take none of those. My name is Trevor Belichick. Had him on a tackling dummy over at a local high school, and he was over there shuffling and hitting bags and all this. And I was like, look, when you see chaos, you have to become chaos. When you don't know what to do, just go hit somebody, right? And the wrestling coach is a defensive corner, and he was like, Trevor's gotten soft. I said, you bite your tongue. And I told him, look, when you're 16, 17 years old, you go knock those fuckers out. He's like, yep, I sure will. But until right now, I just try to survive.
Well, that's a great story. So you liked his response, though, right? You liked his response?
Yeah. Absolutely. He was like, I was like, dude, listen, when you're 17 years old and you are 6'3", 230 pounds, all this will change. He's like, yeah, I know, Dad. I know. And I said, okay, we'll figure it out.
Good. I like it. Great story. We'll keep tabs on him. You'll let me know.
Time now for One Man's Fantasy. where Jim and Trevor tell you what one man you have to add to your fantasy team this week.
All right, time for One Man's Fantasy. In fact, you're the one that named that segment. One Man's Fantasy. Here, you and I tell the one guy that you can find and should find on the waiver wire to add to your fantasy team for week 5. Now, last week I told you to go get Bengals wideout Tyler Boyd for your week 4 matchup. How'd that work out? Pretty damn well. 11 receptions,
pretty damn good,
100 yards, good for 20 points, right? In most PPR fantasy leagues. Two words, Trevor, you're welcome. Hopefully you took my advice. Over Trevor's, because yours did not do as well. Dolphins wide receiver Jakeem Grant no-showed in New England. Two receptions, 17 yards. For whatever reason, Tannehill, your guy, now I know why you're hating on him so much, only targeted 1,000%. Grant twice. So, it's time to bounce.
1,000%.
What's that?
I said 1,000%. That's why I hate Tannehill.
There you go. I like it. Way to keep it real. Time to bounce back, though, with a money waiver pick. TP, who are you scooping up, and who are you adding to your team this week?
All right, so this happens for real. So we have a little family fantasy football thing where I beat up on my wife and my mom, like my kids and all that. Like they never, like half the time they don't even like check the thing, and I'm like, you know, on the waiver wire and trying. Nyheim Hines from the Indianapolis Colts.
Hmm.
Two reasons, right? First of all, he is a change of pace back, and all my running backs on my fantasy team are all the second team backs. Tariq Cohen, 29 points this past weekend. Nyheim Hines was on the bench with 19. And the thing is, as they go into New England to play on a Thursday night, those game plans are not all that complicated. So it's going to become, Naeem, run past line of scrimmage and turn around, and I'm going to dump you the ball. That's the easiest play to put in on a short week, going to England, playing that team, because you have to keep the ball. And what Andrew Luck can't do right now is keep the ball. So they're going to dump it down to him, and he's going to get a couple things going. I think he's going to be a big pickup for people that haven't picked him up, because I did pick him up.
I like it. That makes sense to me. All right, really quickly, I'm going to go with the guy you just mentioned, Tariq Cohen of the Bears. Love this guy. He had himself a day in Chicago's blowout win over the Bucks. 13 carries, 53 yards rushing, 7 catches, 121 yards receiving, a 9-yard catch. Unfortunately, nobody saw this coming, because the first 3 weeks you got nothing from the guy and you had to drop him to grab another flashy guy in waivers. Well, it's time to pick him back up. This is the Tariq Cohen we expected, why he was drafted in the middle to late rounds. And this guy's going to be the guy. I know what you're thinking. Rome, the Bears are on a bye next week. Yeah, no shit, clones. Better early than late. Trust me, this guy is worth stashing on your bench. I'm going to go with Tariq.
Yep, good call.
And now, Price's Picks.
Time to wrap things up with Price's Picks. This is our weekly walk-off. If you're new to the pod, here's exactly how this goes. Trevor picks the Monday night and the Thursday night matchups against the spread. I keep track, and then we see how well a two-time Super Bowl champ and a guy who owned and ran a record label does. So far, so good. 3-2-1 through 3 weeks. Let's see if we can keep it in the black. Tonight's game, Trevor, you got the undefeated Chiefs on the road. They're laying 3.5 against the 2-1 Broncos. Huge divisional implications, but Vegas does like the Chiefs on the road. What about you, TP? Do you like the Chiefs to win by 3.5 or the Broncos to keep it within 3.5?
Easily. The Chiefs are going to win this game. And here's what's going to happen. Patrick Mahomes is going to come off the bus and throw a ball from one end of the goddamn stadium, the outside of the stadium, to the other. And when he does that, he's going to say, this is going to be easy. I've watched the ball. I played there for 10 years. I watched the ball fly. I watched quarterbacks fling it from one side of the field to the other. The thin air, it is going to make him look like Superman. And I expect them to put up those kind of points. At the same time, because the Chiefs defense is what the Chiefs defensive is, and they have to deal with Emmanuel Sanders, I think the Broncos are going to put up 28 points. I think it's going to be something like 45-28. It's going to be a high-scoring blowout. As in, you're just not going to be able to keep pace with the Chiefs as they keep scoring touchdowns, right? So the Chiefs are going to score in their first 3 out of 4 possessions. The Broncos are going to score in their first 2 out of 4. And now all of a sudden you're behind 7. You go to halftime and the same thing is going to happen again. And we're going to wind up with 5 touchdowns or 3 touchdowns or something crazy like that. But 3.5 is easy. That is an easy, easy bet.
All right, so you feel really strongly about that. Chiefs minus 3.5. Write that down. Chiefs minus 3.5. Then Thursday night, you've got the 1-3 Colts heading to Foxborough to play the 2-2 Pats, who are fresh off that ass-kicking of the Dolphins. This is going to be the biggest spread that you've picked against on the pod so far because the Pats are giving 10 points as the heavy, heavy home favorite. How do you see that one going?
Give me Indianapolis and the points. I feel like Frank Reich is about to turn the corner with that team, right? When he does things like go for it on fourth down, in your own territory, there's an overtime game looming at you, that means he has more belief in his guys than everybody else does. That shit speaks volumes. That shit speaks, when you go for what he did tells you his players are better than they're playing. And it tells them they're better than their record is. I believe the Pats do win, but it's a 3-4, 5-point victory. It will not be, this game will be closer than you think. The Pats will come out on top because they will find a way to win with a young team, especially that offensive line, that Colts offensive line. Quentin Nelson looks like a turnstile right now. He'll get it. He'll figure it out. But he looks like kind of like my son playing guard with the chaos all around him and the leaf in the wind. And Quentin, how'd you do? Oh, Dad, it was terrible. It was chaos everywhere. They'll figure it out. But at some point, right now, I think they're going to put in a game plan with Nyheim Hines that says we're going to make our playmakers make plays, and they will keep pace with the Patriots until the very end.
All right, Colts plus 10. Trevor's got the Chiefs minus 3.5 tonight. He's got the Colts plus 10 on Thursday. And what you all have is another week and another awesome episode with the two-time Super Bowl champ, the Take Cannon, Trevor Price. We are back next Monday with episode 5 of the RPO. Until then, we are always continuing this conversation on social. You can find me on Twitter at Jim Rome. You can find Trevor at Trevor_Price. Price is with a Y, PYPRYCE. Hit us up. Let us know what you think about the pod. And if there's anything you want us to go in on next week, tell us that too. If you like, or if we like your suggestion for a topic, we may use it. So get after us on Twitter. Thanks for listening. Trevor, have an amazing week. Nice job as always. And I will talk to you soon, big dog.
Absolutely, man. I appreciate it.
That was fun, man. That was great. Have a great week. Everybody else, see you soon. We're out.